You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started. Hey guys, and welcome back to Fire and Chill. Today's episode is a little bit different, and it's for some of you might be a little bit sad because this is actually going to be the last episode of Fire and Chill. I'm a bit sad about that, Pat. Are you?
Yeah, man.
It's a bit unfortunate.
Very unfortunate.
So, I guess we should explain why it's going to be the last episode of Fire and Chill. So, if you haven't heard, when this comes out, probably in the last 2 weeks or so, ASIC, who is the financial regulator in Australia, has come out swinging, I'll say, with a few new rules and restrictions and more or less a large clampdown on what people who make online financial content, what they're allowed to say and what they're not allowed to say. And it is going by the rulings and what they've said. They've been pretty explicit. It's quite clear that it is very, very restrictive around financial topics, investing in particular, and any sort of financial products, I guess, or things that you use in your financial life can't really be spoken about. So we'll kind of explain all that and, you know, examples of the rules and what it looks like in practice and why it is so restrictive and why they've actually brought these into place in the beginning, because they've done it for a reason. So we'll get into that.
Yeah. And probably just to clarify, I don't think these are new rules per se, but it's just a guideline on the interpretation that seems very all-encompassing, let's say.
Extremely.
So the laws haven't changed at all, but I think ASIC's just basically come out and said any discussion of financial products at all could be interpreted as giving financial advice.
All right. So why have they done this, Pat? Like, what's going on, mate? Why would they just all of a sudden come out with this new guideline?
Yeah. So ASIC is pretty concerned about the proliferation of quote unquote bad advice on the internet. So things like stock pump and dump schemes, or people like trying to sell or convince other people to invest in individual companies or try and ride waves or day trade or any of that sort of business. And perhaps they're also concerned about people doing this for their own profits, like shilling products from companies or trying to attain an advantage on the market, let's say, if they're big enough. Let's try and be very generous and say that perhaps they're doing this.
Well, they're trying to reduce harm to the consumer, yeah, or possible harm to the consumer from receiving misleading or inappropriate or just terrible guidance on anything financial related, which sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? I mean, that sounds pretty reasonable.
Yeah, that does seem reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah. In this new guideline, we'll go through a couple of things that have been said, but basically, as we've said, anything financial and investment related is more or less off the cards. And while that sounds unlikely, it is unfortunately the case. So one quote from someone from ASIC who was speaking to the AFR recently said, if it's influencing people, then you're just going to need a license, even if you're not being paid in any way. So the word influencing people, that is quite broad, Pat. I mean, like, you could write almost anything or say almost anything, and that could influence someone else. So that is not allowed. But apparently it's allowed in every other area of our lives, just not in our personal finances.
Pretty much, yep.
So one example of this might be, I just bought a house, right? So I took out house insurance. But if someone says, who did you get for your house insurance? I can't answer that question, because if I answer that question and say, oh, I went through such and such a company, then that could influence someone to buy a financial product. So that is not allowed. And obviously, I can't mention what super fund I use or what bank account I have or anything like that, because that, again, could influence someone to use or not use or sign up for a financial product. And so it's quite clear that that is not allowed, even if you're not being paid a cent for saying so. So it's like, it sounds reasonable, but then when you put it into practice, it becomes very, it squashes free speech by a lot.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like, this isn't just Dave and I taking an extreme interpretation. Even this was another quote from ASIC in, again, an AFR article. And I quote, "It is very possible that your own investment decisions or strategies could in fact influence one of your followers or be reasonably regarded as intending to influence one of your followers."
So even if you're saying, even if me and Pat are just having a discussion between each other about what we're doing, or we're saying something on our blogs and we're just documenting our financial journeys, that's basically a big no-no now, because I might be writing and, you know, documenting what I'm doing, but then that obviously that can influence someone, so that's not allowed. You're not even if you're not answering someone's question or what should I do, it's not even about that. It's like, if you're saying I'm doing X and this is, you know, this is why I'm doing it and whatever, that's not on.
Yeah.
So any comment you make around that kind of thing is just off the cards.
Yeah. So Dave and I will link in the show notes to this, that firstly, the ASIC guidance, and then maybe a couple of the AFR articles. So you can, you know, read some of this for yourself if you haven't heard of it yet. But yeah, this is really creating waves in the blogging community, the FI blogging community. I don't think that we are the intended targets of this stuff. I think it's more social media, Instagram, TikTok, that sort of thing. However, we are definitely in the crosshairs, let's say.
We're still covered by
damage,
because we're online financial content creators. So it's still the same thing in their eyes. They don't really care. I think they're just using those examples because they're the most widely followed, maybe. Blogs aren't as widely followed as, like, obviously a YouTube account maybe, or a TikTok account or something like that.
Blogs do not get nearly the same traffic that you can get on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram. On Instagram, it's, I wouldn't say easy, but it's, you know, fairly common to amass hundreds of thousands of subscribers or viewers. Whereas in a blog, if you got to 100,000 email subscribers you know, readers, that would be extraordinary.
They're really different like that.
They're very different. You'd be in the top fraction of a percent.
So another thing they said, basically, you are allowed to provide factual information about certain investments. So it's not that you can't speak about investments at all. You're allowed to provide factual information in a way that doesn't constitute any sort of recommendation or doesn't imply that anything is better than anything else. So, no, really, you can describe financial products with no implied recommendation that one is better than another. So
that's nonsense.
It basically means you can't be helpful in any way.
So Dave put this really well in the blog post he wrote. Like, you just become like a walking loudspeaker for the PDS of
your
fact sheet. You're a fact sheet.
A fact sheet. Yeah.
You can't say anything interesting. You can't make any like direct comparisons where you're saying, oh, this price is cheaper for this product. You might still want to buy the more expensive one.
If you say this one has a lower fee than this one, that would imply that that one's better. So that's no good.
It's sad, isn't it? It's really, really sad.
So at that point, you just wouldn't bother. Like, why would you bother talking about investments in that way. You just wouldn't bother because that information is not helpful to anyone. I mean, the reason we try and provide the information we do is to help people wade through all the jargon and all the bullshit and all the nonsense that's out there and try and gently nudge people into like a general direction of like, here's how you can approach it because here's some sensible things to look at. And what some of the half decent options are, you know, like, and we're trying to filter out all the garbage for people, but you're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to say that anything's better than anything else. So you're basically left with like, okay, we can talk about how to save money and how to maybe think about your goals and things in life. But then when it comes to doing anything with that money, we're just like at a big red stop sign. We just like have to pass you off to someone with a license, like a professional advisor.
Mm.
But that's the thing. Like, they've basically said, okay, here's another quote. For many influencers acting in good faith, as opposed to those involved in scams or promoting risky products, the regulator's ire could be avoided by simply becoming licensed. So if Pat and I go and get a financial license, which is not easy and definitely not cheap, we're then
huge undertaking.
Monster. And then we're allowed to continue to provide the same information that we're providing now.
Yeah.
Which, because we've got the magical piece of paper that says that we know what we're talking about, I suppose, or that we're a trustworthy person.
Yep.
Which is, that's kind of ridiculous, to be honest. And it's not like having a license makes you a more legitimate person to take advice off, because the amount of people that I've had email me and say, oh, I've been with this advisor, here's what they've told me. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I can't believe this is still happening to people, being charged many, many thousands of dollars to set up some plan and then being put into some ridiculously complicated portfolio that has shit things in it.
Yes. I've seen it too, man. I've seen it too. Like, this doesn't actually help. People get terrible advice from license holders, they get terrible advice from non-license holders. Like, this doesn't stop the terrible advice.
You can't remove, like having a big blanket rule like this can't remove bad operators.
I would even argue
on both
sides. Well, I mean, I would even argue that people with the ulterior motive of needing to make a living out of this are more inclined to, I don't know, have their decision or their advice influenced by...
Because it's a living, they're relying on it.
They're relying on it, yeah. I'm not in any way saying that's how everyone operates. I'm not saying that they operate that to 100%. But, I mean, if you've got a list of 20 products that you're happy with and 5 of them you will get paid for promoting and the other 15 you won't, that is still influencing that advice, that decision. Even if you are happy with those 5, there's a whole other 15 that are now off the table.
The incentives are there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I suppose the other thing to point out is it's not even about the money, it seems, like for ASIC and even for us as well, like we can explain that. But ASIC has said, you know, even if you're not being paid in any way, you're still not allowed to do it, but we expect you to go and get licensed and whatever. So if we were to go and do that, like I said before, the stuff that we would share wouldn't change. I think most of the content creators would be more than happy if, okay, ban all of the, say, affiliate links or any sort of monetization of blogs and of podcasts and of TikTok and whatever else, like ban the monetization of it. And then, because that by itself would remove a lot of the people who are in it only for the money, obviously.
Yeah, it'd remove a lot of the really
the bad
terrible
incentives.
Advice. Yeah,
incentives. So that would really help. But they've gone further than that. We, as trying to provide like pretty decent information, would continue doing it if there was no money involved. But that's like, we're not allowed to do that, basically. The whole point of doing, but then like if we get licensed, you know, we become part of the secret society that's allowed to talk about investments, then we can start charging people for our special advice, Pat, and have a coaching program and all the rest of it. But I don't know about you, but the whole point of starting to make content was so that people didn't have to go and pay for it.
Yep. And so, I mean, it's just to provide information that isn't easy to get, isn't necessarily out there.
Because it's not like it's, so we're gating off investing and any sort of financial product, I guess, insurance and mortgages and whatever, like it's some extremely complicated universe that you only a qualified professional could ever possibly know what they're talking about in this area.
And Dave and I were discussing before the show, there are some certain topics, and we can't mention them here again, but there are certain topics in finance that the vast majority of professional advisors get wrong, or seemingly get wrong, I should say, because I don't know the vast majority of advisors and I haven't surveyed them. But when you look at the information online, it's 90% incorrect, and it's only a few independent bloggers who have no incentive to shill a product that have brought it to light. And then when other people look at it, and even some like genuine, really hardworking, good advisors look at like those blog posts or that content, they're like, yeah, like this is correct. This is, yeah, it's really sad that the way forward for ASIC seemingly is complete censorship.
Yeah, because that's the thing. We would happily continue just with the free speech, like take away any financial thing. That's not really a problem. But to squash the free speech is, I feel like that's missing the point. Like you're trying to protect, you're protecting a few people perhaps, right? But then you're also giving up all of the benefits of the, because the majority of people would be doing the right thing with their writing and whatever content they're producing. Like 80, 90% of people would be giving half decent, you know, like what they're talking about would be actually somewhat sensible, right? So it'd actually be helping a lot of people, because a lot of people just need to get started, and it's just simple nudges in the right direction, nothing like super detailed and complicated. And this has come out of, it's not come out of nowhere. It's come because there's some problems with trust in the financial industry, which I'm sure everyone's quite aware of at this stage. It's been kind of well documented for the last few years or so. So yeah, it's just sad that there's going to be a large gap in the, I guess, online content landscape in terms of people learning about investing on their own. I suppose that's like a big chasm you referred to, Pat.
And there is sort of the suggestion that, oh, look, we could keep talking about mindsets, we could talk about saving, we could talk about, you know, general things like wealth, minimalism, happiness, all that sort of stuff. Funnily, we could also keep talking about crypto and property.
That's fine.
But yeah, investment products regulated by ASIC, that's not fine at all. We're not allowed to talk about that. But like then it just, we could keep talking about those things, but then it kind of leaves this weird, like you said, chasm.
This big void, this big empty space. So people,
it's like,
are
so cooking. Why are you telling us to save?
And then what?
Dave, how are these savings going to bring you financial independence? Like, go on, Dave, give me the answer. What's the next step?
Step one, save. Step two, go see an advisor. Step three, retire.
I can't even recommend that you invest the money or not. Maybe I can. I'm not sure. I haven't looked into it that far. I can probably say you should invest it, but you have to speak to an advisor about how to invest it.
So like our content hasn't come out of left field, right? It's there because there's a gap, and there's like basic financial education is not being provided anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's why that's why content creators exist, to try and close that gap between the people who know what's going on and the people who have no idea, which is most people.
Yep.
And people want to learn about it from someone who's like them, who they don't have to pay thousands of dollars to go and see, and who they're actually not sure is going to be providing them the right advice. Because you don't know, if you go and see someone and pay them a lot of money, you don't really know at that point if that advice is good or not, because you don't have the knowledge of what's good advice and what's not good advice. So it's kind of ironic that at the point where you realize what's good advice and not good advice is the point where you no longer need it, because you've figured it out of what makes sense and what doesn't, and what's reasonable and what's not. So people just want to learn in a casual way from people who seem authentic and trustworthy and kind of like them, I suppose, and that they can relate to, rather than taking the risk and paying a lot of money to get a plan that they're not sure about from someone they haven't met and they don't know anything about. And so you can see where the content has come from and why there's a demand for it. So it's sad to shut that down.
This whole thing just seems very archaic.
Should we lighten the mood?
Yeah, okay.
I've got an idea.
Oh, okay. Go on.
Should we go through an example of one of their... So in the guideline... No. In the guideline, they've put some examples of what an influencer might say and then their view on whether it is or isn't financial advice or financial product advice. I mean, some of them were pretty obvious and pretty helpful, but then there's some gray areas as well, Pat. Help me walk through this one. There's this one's a bit of a gray area.
This one's a doozy. I can see why they were so non-committal with what they said here.
Well, look, I might have to get some legal advice on this one, what you're about to say. Run us through it, mate.
So here's an example. Dave, here's a piece of advice that you might share. You can save money each week by preparing your own home-cooked lunches for work instead of eating out. Now, ASIC wants to let us know whether... what they think of this, if you wrote this or said this in an Instagram or TikTok.
Okay. What's the verdict?
This is unlikely to be financial product advice.
So the summary is tips on saving money and budgeting that don't involve financial products. That's basically what we've said there because it's about, you know, saving money by home-cooked lunches. And so the ruling on that one is, you know, there's no financial products involved. But the ruling is, this is unlikely to be financial product advice. So I guess it could be in some context where there's no financial products involved. Somehow it could be advice. Fucking hell, mate.
They're really unhelpful.
That's ridiculous. So they're making the rules word for word. They're scripting this out and they still can't tell you. In something so black and white, they still use words like unlikely. That's real helpful, isn't it?
It's an egregious example of just like vague, non-committal, non-like ass covering type crap.
So this is all being done supposedly in the best interest of the consumer. And you see ASIC saying it, you see the supporters of the rule changes or the guidelines saying it. But is that in the best interest of the consumer? Is that really true though?
Yeah, because all throughout history, we've always seen the democratization of information lead to a worse outcome for the people of the country. Every time we let information run free, that has led to worse outcomes for the people.
Less information is better. Yeah. It's more useful when we've got less people's experiences and less people's insights to draw on when trying to educate ourselves. That's always helpful.
It's always better when there's a gatekeeper to the information, when they get to decide what sort of information you're allowed to share.
And so obviously we can become on the other side of that gate, mate, if we become a fee-charging advisor, paying fees to ASIC. That's quite convenient, isn't it?
That is very convenient. Isn't it funny that, ASIC has this regulator function, but they also get all of their fees and all of their income from the organizations that they regulate. And then in turn, organizations get to be invited to and sit on like committees and get feedback from those organizations for things that ASIC are proposing.
It's nice and cozy.
Nice and cozy. Yep.
So I guess another thing like we should bring up is it gets, right, we've got some examples, but the word influencer is not really clear. If you're writing about, I mean, you might be like a journalist or a writer reporting on the stock market or reporting on company results, or you might be working at a bank and the banks release like market forecasts and like all sorts of stuff all the time, like reports on whether things are good or not good or whatever. And even if you're someone who's writing about certain events and certain news results and all that rest of it, you're influencing people. Like, where do we draw the line there? Like, it's so tricky because anyone can influence anyone else. What about someone who's on Facebook? They can influence their friends.
Yeah.
Or if it's only if you've got a certain audience, then what about chat forums where there's thousands of people involved. And yes, you might only be one person, but if you're a prolific commenter on that forum, you build up a reputation and people then figure out that you know what you're talking about. So that you then have influence over a large number of people. So yeah, you might be anonymous, but people are still going to take what you say as being influential because that people know that you know what you're talking about. So where do we draw the line? I don't get it. It's so gray.
So it's very inconsistent, shall we say. They've drawn this murky line in the sand. They've used the word influencer, but they've refused to provide any definition of what they consider to be an influencer. Even when directly asked, how do you define influencer?
I wrote a post all about this and my thoughts on it. And so somebody wrote the comment on the blog that they approached ASIC and asked, so what do you consider an influencer? Because, you know, I can influence my friends on Facebook if I'm talking to them about investments. And so they posed this question to ASIC, and ASIC basically came back with like this scripted legal rebuttal that was like, we cannot provide you with professional legal advice. Please go and seek counsel on what is right for you and your situation. And just this generic bullshit that's so unhelpful for such a simple question that they themselves have created the terms and like making the rules, and they can't even answer simple questions.
Yeah.
Just points out how ridiculous it is.
It is all very ridiculous, right?
And so what about things like, so I mentioned this in the blog, but what about like, are we supposed to start pulling Barefoot Investor books off the shelves? Someone said, well, he had a financial license when he wrote it. Okay, he doesn't now. Is his information less valid now that he doesn't have a license anymore? Or was it okay advice to begin with? Are we basing whether someone's advice or what someone has written is valid or not, what kind of paperwork they have hanging in their office? Like, that just seems ridiculous. Oh, there's a piece of paper up there. Oh, this person's worth listening to. Oh, no, he doesn't have the certificate. Sorry, not worth listening to. Invalid. Move along.
Pretty much.
As you can probably tell, we feel like this is a fair bit of an overreach and it's
encroachment on free speech.
Yeah, it's about free speech. Other areas of our lives we're allowed to talk about endlessly and provide our thoughts on, you know, whether health and fitness or travel or property or cars or
crypto
or whatever, anything in our lives is okay. But now this is now a even more taboo topic, even though it was already. Now it's even worse, even less discussions about
it. It's regulated to be taboo. You don't talk about it. You're not allowed to talk about it.
What about the irony of people being able to consume content from overseas but not from locals?
Yeah. So that's like possibly like the biggest oversight as well. It's like, so ASIC can regulate the relatively small market that is Australia and the small number of content creators relatively that Australia has. But like whole of UK, the whole of the USA, whole of the rest of the world.
So people are going to be reading stuff and watching stuff from creators overseas and thinking that that applies to them. And they're going to be trying to implement that, you know, distilling what they've learned and applying that locally when it's not quite, you know, it's not quite applicable like that.
No, not at all.
And so they're getting no one to say, hey, here's why it might be a bit different here. And, you know, here's how the kind of locals are doing it. But no, that's not allowed.
Yeah, so what else, Dave? Let's just try and go through all the questions or suggestions that our listeners might have. How about we just work under someone else's ASFL or we rent it?
So
in that sort of scenario.
They're extremely expensive licenses, even to... I don't even know how that works, to rent a license.
Well, part of the issue is like it almost then becomes their content and their responsibility to review and basically gatekeep and audit or, you know, make sure that what you're saying is consistent with their understanding of financial products, let's say. So it's then you then get issues with autonomy.
Because you can work for someone else who you can become a, what was it? What was the phrase, Pat?
Authorized rep.
An authorized representative for someone who holds a license.
Yep.
But you then essentially become an employee of sorts for someone else. So you're no longer like an independent party who's doing their own thing. And
it would still probably be quite expensive.
Yeah.
Really quite expensive, even just to have that arrangement. And then they could essentially gatekeep your content and then basically hold this massive threat over you. Oh, without me, you have to take down all of your content. So you have these real independence issues and autonomy issues. Even if the relationship starts out quite, you know, civil and like really helpful to everyone, these things change over time.
And so we don't fancy going to study to get our own license and pay giant amounts of money in licensing and jumping through compliance hoops and going through the admin of being licensed, like Fire and Chill being a licensed entity or something like that. It's just completely unattractive to both of us. Like, we just wanted to do this to just provide simple, helpful content, but we're not trying to create some dominant financial conglomerate or some shit like that to charge people for the same stuff that we've been saying for free.
Yep, essentially. Oh, yeah. I can't imagine going back to study.
No.
And like you said, it wouldn't change the information we share.
And it would take away from the enjoyment of it because it becomes like a, I don't know, it kind of becomes like a corporate entity or some like business situation then. And there's paperwork to wade through and all sorts of, just becomes extremely unattractive.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm retired, mate. Anti-paperwork.
Well, anti-nonsense at least.
Yeah, anti-nonsense, like, yeah. Anti-hoop jumping.
Yeah.
I'm not jumping through no hoops,
mate. Box ticking.
Yeah.
Because that's all it would be. It would be like a 3-year box ticking exercise.
Yeah. To then turn around and do the same shit that we're doing now.
Yep.
And pay thousands of dollars for the privilege.
Yep.
Wow. Got to say, that's not the most appealing option.
No.
So the way I feel about it is I like doing what I'm doing, but obviously, I mean, as you can tell, these rules make it pretty restrictive and pretty, it just takes away from the enjoyment of what you're doing and also what you're allowed to say. So when I write stuff and even when I'm talking here, I'm just trying to say like what I would say to a friend.
Yep.
So if you
And I think that really comes through in the podcast, in the podcast production, when we're just chatting, you know, we're just having a chat here where I can't speak for Dave, but I've been doing this for 5 years. And if I summed up all the money I've spent and made, I'd probably be about net zero about now after 5 years, hundreds or thousands of hours of effort.
Yeah, imagine the hourly rate on that. Yeah.
You know, it's never been about making tons of money. It's always nice to cover our costs so that we can do it for free. So it's like a free hobby.
Yeah.
But it's never been about, you know, turning over 10, 20, 30, 40K a year. That was never going to happen and never has happened. Even I would say after Dave and I are possibly some of the most well-known people in this niche in Australia, I mean, over the world. So there's really limited scope. If you're being genuine and if you're not just in it for the money, if you're really just trying to share good advice, there's not a lot to advertise when your main bit of advice is keep it simple, don't spend your fucking money.
Yeah. Like, avoid most things.
Avoid most. There's not a lot of advertising or marketing relationships you can form when those are your ideals.
When you think most things are nonsense. Yeah. Oh, that's fair. So what's the plan, mate? What's happening from here? Actually, it sounds like we don't have any friends in this department, but we do. So there's someone who disagrees with ASIC and there's someone quite prominent, actually. And so the Minister for Financial Services, her name's Jane Hume, she's actually been quoted as saying that the government won't help consumers that fall victim to a finfluencer's advice, saying that would be perpetuating a nanny state culture. And so she said, there's never an excuse for that, and referring to misleading or scamming people, but the existence of a small number of unscrupulous actors doesn't justify wholesale constraints and policing and freedom of expression for everyone. So I think that's how we feel about it. Like, we agree that there is a problem with people dodgy people giving garbage advice and deliberately misleading people.
On both sides of the official and unofficial advice network.
Yeah, yeah. But what she said, policing the freedom of expression doesn't seem justified. It seems too much.
Of course it is. You know,
imagine you add up all the dollars that have been saved and generated in wealth from the people following good, sensible content versus those that the dollars that have been lost from the pump and dump promoters or whatever it is, right? It would be like 50-1 or maybe even 100-1.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like giving up $100 of wealth for society to save a dollar, yeah, in losses. It's ridiculous. Financial regulator needs to whip out their calculator, mate. Do some cost-benefit analysis. Huh?
Honestly, I don't know why they felt it necessary to take this move.
Man with a hammer?
Ah, maybe.
They're the man with the hammer. This is all they know how to do. I've got a hammer, I might as well use it. Bang, bang, bang. They're playing whack-a-mole. Yeah, I don't know. As you can probably tell, we're pretty disappointed. And it's mostly the lack of being able to say what we would naturally say is the disheartening part. I think I can speak for both of us when I say.
And it's just like having, for both of us, I think, like roughly this 5 years of creating this stuff and talking to people and just kind of creating this identity and this really world of good that I know, you know, both of us have done. And we've gotten many comments from people, especially on Dave's most recent blog post about this issue, like really just beautiful comments about just how much good Dave has done with all the content he puts out. And yeah, it's just really disheartening for this to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we should take a moment to thank everyone for their support over our 50 episodes that we've been doing the podcast for.
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
It was definitely a fun 2 years. We've both enjoyed ourselves thoroughly, and I think people who've been listening for any stretch of time will get the sense and the vibe that we definitely enjoy ourselves when we do these podcasts.
Yep.
But the restrictions and the filtering and the muffling of opinion, it's just too much. It's just becomes pretty unattractive.
And yeah. I mean, I'm sure we'd also get the comment, Dave, that it's pretty unlikely that ASIC would, you know, come after you or I, or they'd come after us immediately without warning. And to that I say, it's like, well, you know, I'm not sure what your risk profile is. There are definitely other bloggers and podcasters out there where they hold the same opinion and they'll just continue to do what they're doing, perhaps with some small tweaks.
Mm-hmm.
But like we're talking about the risk of complete and utter like financial and life ruin to maintain a hobby.
Well, that would be pretty low, I would think.
It's a very low risk, but the consequences are very high is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'd say the likelihood is extremely low, but
yeah,
the consequences are just like way too high for my personal risk tolerance anyway. That being said, we'll see what other five bloggers and five podcasters are doing. I think some of them are going to try and stay afloat with making small changes, but yeah.
I think at this stage, I will still write about certain topics, but obviously I can't share much or really anything about what I would be doing. So I could talk about certain other topics, obviously, which is fine. And yeah, at this stage, I'm thinking I might do that just because I enjoy writing, really, I guess.
Mm.
But yeah, it is pretty unappealing. So I would definitely be spending less time on it.
Yeah, I honestly think I'm just going to pull everything.
Oh, because they've also said that they've explicitly stated that you have to go through any content that's
any
on the
existing
internet.
Content, so, yeah, any old content. Yep.
So that's like 5 years worth of content for Pat and I. So that's, I mean, that's a massive mission in itself.
How do you filter just saying long-term, broad-based index, like
you
investing?
You just say long-term investing. That's all you can say.
I can't even say that. I can say long-term investing, but I almost struggle to find a single post of mine that doesn't mention long-term, broad-based, globally diversified index investing. So, yes, final thoughts. I will probably just be pulling everything. I'll probably leave it up for another week or so if people want it. But yeah, it'll all come down very, very soon.
And so what are we doing with the podcast, mate? Obviously, this is our last episode, but what are we doing with the existing content?
So the existing content will be left accessible for a short while, say after this episode is released. What do we think, Dave? A week?
Do 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Final bit of generosity, mate.
2 weeks. That's the level of risk we're willing to accept.
Because you basically can't go back and edit past podcast episodes. It's ridiculous. So
no, it'd be extremely time consuming and extremely painful. It would lead to a disjointed, weird podcast that makes no sense whatsoever.
Completely impractical. Yeah. So we'll leave the podcast up for a few weeks if people want to download all the episodes and save them somewhere, and maybe they can listen to them later if they like. And then they will be unpublished after that. And I'll probably have to go through my blog and just flat out delete probably a lot of posts that mention anything. I don't know, you can see
where this is going. Then we just become a post about saving, maybe like a bit more than that. But still, like, you just miss this great big chunk of...
It's empty space.
Empty space, yeah. Anyway.
Should we wrap it up?
We should wrap it up. I do hope that we continue to see content from other people, but I totally understand if, you know, they consider it too much risk as well. There will still certainly be content from overseas bloggers and podcasters. Yeah. And though it doesn't perfectly apply to Australia, a lot of the concepts can still apply. It's just the specifics where people have to wade through muddy water. Some of my favorite is, J.L. Collins, which is, you know, a brilliant resource, very American, but at least once people listen to or read that, they can then try their best to talk to people and get on Reddit and get on other forums maybe where they might find some of that content.
I wonder if they'll try and get onto that, because those forums have a massive following.
It's true.
So I don't know. But yeah, that's not a bad bet. There's definitely some great overseas content creators where you can learn a lot from. And obviously the people who are listening to this podcast have hopefully learned how to do it for themselves. So it's really like the future people, Pat, that are impacted the most. Because our community roughly knows what to do. They're probably just enjoying our discussions about it. So it's really the
up and coming.
Yeah. It's the next people, the beginners. Yeah. So I don't know. We just need to talk to people on the ground, I guess, in real life as much as possible. Like all of our listeners as well, because that's the only way that you can spread the word in a way that you're allowed to. They haven't, as far as I know, they haven't put any guidelines around speaking to people in real life yet. I'm sure that'll come.
Yeah, you know what? It's just like any other time where free speech has been restrained.
I'm imagining
the safest way is just on the ground in secret circles. Nothing that's recorded.
I'm imagining this like future society where, you know, like the CCTV cameras are watching, and then they're like lip reading at the same time, like, oh, he recommended such and such an investment to this person here. Let's send the robo police out to get him.
Yep. Anyway, I genuinely hope that the advice is further clarified, we'll say, because they're never going to backtrack. That'd be too reputationally bad. So I hope it's further clarified would be what it's called.
More specifics would be good, but I doubt that's coming.
I doubt it too. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening to Fire and Chill. We're so grateful we got episode 50 in. So that's a nice round number, 50 episodes. Even though this last one wasn't really about what Dave and I love to speak about, it was a bit of a somber goodbye and an explanation about why we really had to stop what we were doing, unless we wanted to, you know, take on a level of risk we weren't comfortable with, or we wanted to continue in a severely restricted and weird, confusing way that would be unappealing to both of us, or again, some of those other weird kind of compromises or workarounds that would place other restrictions on us that weren't
joining the secret society.
Joining the secret society or being under someone else.
Yeah.
Again, pretty unappealing, especially Dave and I's personality, where we're just about making things straightforward and simple and doing things that make sense and not necessarily creating a web of license holders that we can work under and be not controlled by, but basically needing to be checked by.
Yeah. So again, thank you so much for your support over what's been 2 years now of Fire and Chill. We really, really appreciate it. And we've definitely enjoyed making the podcast for you guys. And we hope you've gotten some value out of it while it was running. And again, if you want to download the episodes, they'll still be live for a few weeks before we eventually take them down.
So I do think that making noise about this, I mean, we probably can't make enough noise about this for ASIC to notice because they're just too large a regulator and they just don't care, to be honest. They've got their mandate and they've, you know, got their advisory committees and the people that they basically represent and the people they regulate. Yeah, I'm lost. I don't know what we'd do.
The only thing that I could think of would be to write to the Minister for Financial Services because
I mean, if she's a single person that can have influence and if she sees that enough of her constituents care about this, then so maybe she will be encouraged or emboldened to take this on because we know she agrees with it in principle. But if she sees that she has the support from the community, maybe, that can make a difference.
So she is contactable, so we can put her page and her page in the show notes for you to find a way to email her or something like that if you want to reach out and express your frustration, I guess, with the new rules that have been put in place.
Yes, and share what, without mentioning names, but how much you've been helped by finding accessible information online that wasn't
being provided by the
people selling the products, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a wrap.
All right. Thank you so much, guys, again. And all the best with your financial journeys. And we appreciate your support again. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.